So here's a question for you. How can we get that movie into all the TV networks, to theaters? How can we get that out here?
Is this on?
Yes.
We've been turned down by HBO, Showtime, PBS. We've been trying to get the film distributed by all the big networks. We ran a 1 hour version of the film, was run on 30 or 40 PBS stations, but it's a boring distinction, but an important one. It wasn't an official PBS film. It was provided by a third party as content for PBS stations to run it if they chose. And the results of that was that plenty of people ran it, but it had zero marketing. And when there's zero marketing, you might as well not even run the film because no one knows it's coming and no one makes the time to see it. So that had a tiny little ripple of an effect. So we're still seeking wide distribution in this country anyway.
Thank you. And one more question for you before we go to the next questions. Was the Sundance Independent Film Festival contacted, and what was their reaction to the film?
Yes. We sent the film to Sundance with their encouragement. One of our colleagues who was a consultant on the film has a big position at the Sundance Film Festival, and she said she'd, talk to her friends. And the reviewer who looked at it actually emailed us on the QT and said she thought it was a fantastic film and it was one of the better films that she'd seen and that it was too political for Sundance. And of course we did not get in, so.
Okay, this question is, I think, for Rula. A lot of these questions are for Rula here. I asked an LA Times reporter, how can he participate in the distortion of the news? He said, if I can get them to leave 10% of my copy uncensored, it is worthwhile to continue. Please comment. And maybe that goes for all of you. Do you want to start? Okay. So
the LA Times reporter made that statement,
yes,
that if he can get his editors to leave.
Leave 10% of it uncensored, it's worthwhile to continue. Did you find censorship?
That's a good ratio, No, I mean, censorship, self-censorship, it's part of media life. I mean, if we could get away with 10% on this issue, we'd revolutionize America. I mean, right now, it's like it's a 90% censorship ratio. So I give it to me, 10%, I love it, I mean, I just want to reflect. When I was at the New York Times Magazine, I did a...
Yeah.
When I was at the New York Times Magazine, I did a cover story on the gun lobby, and I wrote a very long article sending up the NRA and talking about their sexual fetishization of guns and everything else. And you've never seen an article in the New York Times Magazine about the Israel lobby with one-tenth of that kind of free speech involved. So.
There's a cozy relationship. I mean, one of the reasons that made me actually, in 2014, do what I did on MSNBC was, these officials would be, Israeli officials, would be like 99% of the time, and they would never be challenged, as the documentary represent, they would never be asked about the occupation or the siege, or it's like, I remember, I almost choked on my coffee one morning, and I was watching Schieffer interviewing Bibi Netanyahu, and the end of the interview, obviously, it was softball questions, like, Mr. Prime Minister, how do you feel? Is it safe in Tel Aviv? And he was bombarding and pounding Gaza. And in the end, he said, like the former Prime Minister of Israel said, we will never forgive the Arabs for forcing us to kill their children. And I looked at the television and said, is this a fucking joke? I mean, I was horrified. Then I went to my network, and that morning, one of our journalists, one of the best one we ever had, reporter who covered the Gaza war in 2012, was Ayman Muhyiddin. And he just filmed three kids killed on a beach. He just filmed it. I was in a TV station, and I saw the panic. Because suddenly, there's one story, and it's a major story, that was filmed on camera, where you see the missile striking, the first one, killing the first two, and then the second missile, and this kid is running after, they were actually playing football on a beach, and this the third kid, 6-year-old, running, and the second missile come and strike him. And you couldn't explain that. There's no justification to this. The telephone start, you know, ringing, and the justification that there was a missile there, and they kept calling, producers kept calling Ayman Muhyiddin. Are you sure there was another missile in the area? And he said, no, every journalist was there. We watched it. We filmed it. It's on film. You had 3-4 cameras there. That story was taken from him, given to another one who wasn't even in Gaza. He was in Tel Aviv. He just arrived. And he was actually called out of Gaza because he witnessed that moment. I went on air, and I was with Ronan Farrow, and I said, our coverage was not only disgustingly biased, it's a disgrace. We're betraying the American people because we are basically not telling them the whole story. We're lying blandly to them. My every show was canceled, and I left the building knowing that I will never be come back. And leaving the building, I remember some of the producer stopping me. They said, well, you don't understand the kind of bullying and harassment and attention. Recently, somebody from, I will not mention name, from the Washington Post was telling me that every article they write, they have to answer to lobbyists and organization like CAMERA. And I said, I don't care what kind of harassment, you just stand up to it. Basically, you stand up to it. So when I submit an article and they tell me, and look, supposedly I'm an Arab Muslim black woman telling these nice white guys in these networks, you can't handle a little bit of bullying. I mean, you're in the wrong job. Probably you're not only in the wrong job. If you can't stand up to these thugs, then they will get away with it. They will get away over and again. I am so grateful and thankful that independent organizations exist, like MondoWise and Alternate, and I mean, now, and I'm, and these kind of documentary. And what I'm asking all of you, and forgive me if I am shameless about it, we need to support these organizations. These are independent organizations that live on donations. Whatever philanthropy you are doing, this is the ultimate battleground. Whatever you're doing, I will be like Sanders. $7, whatever that is, give it to MondoWise, to Alternate, to Catherine to promote her movie, because this is will change America forever, will change the public opinion. You know what? When Rupert Murdoch wanted to buy Reuters the first time, and the legal system was clear in the UK, the first thing he said, and he retracted what he said, I don't buy newspapers. And that was a lie, obviously. He said that he used to buy journalists. Guess what? We can actually shift the public opinion. Whatever, if they put $100 million on one end to manipulate the public opinion, you can put much less, because one footage like that can really shift the public opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for maybe one more question, or should we close the door here? This was more about what you started out talking about, the email exchange. Do you want to talk more about that? That was uncovered, by the way, in a FOIA request made by Grant Smith, and he found it accidentally. And that's a kind of thing that it appalled us when we read it. And it's would you like to talk a little bit more about that?
I'm really grateful that we exposed this, disgusting misogyny. And again, I love when white men lecture me or lecture others about how we go in the Middle East and we invade certain countries to liberate women and women choices. And then CNN put against me somebody like Rabbi Shmuley. And forgive me if I'm about to throw up. And he's telling me that an Arab woman like myself would never... he's patronizing me about my rights. Basically, they look down at the Middle East, at the Arabs, and we're, you know, when I wrote my New York column about minority rights or minority lives in Israel, the only way we're described as Arab Muslims, women, or brown, as either a terrorist or a Bedouin without a nationality. In American media, we are basically, you know, every question starts where, like, how do you feel? As if my job is to feel. My job is to analyze phenomena. Whether I look, my description, whether I'm tall or short, whether I'm big or small, it does not matter. Whether I look like this or I had some plastic surgery to look like this, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it's about the argument. And since I start working, everything we predicted about the trajectory of the war on terror, the Iraqi war, that it will be, if you listen to whatever any Arab analyst have told you about the war on terror, about invading Iraq, how it will create mass radicalization, will destabilize the entire region, and will basically bring, you know, we had only 200 jihadists after 9/11. Only 200, according to the FBI, there were only 200. Today we have hundreds of thousands of, if that is a success, then what is failure? So every Arab analyst has been saying the same thing. And what is their weapon to throw against people like me? Oh, yeah, her looks. Give me a break. I mean, like, you know what? It didn't hit me, but it explained, I think, to the public a mindset of these thugs and bullies. I'm used to it because I had that in Italy, and I'm exercised because I had ministers in Italy refusing to answer questions because I was a Muslim or I was brown or some kind of things. I mean, you know, I remember interviewing Berlusconi in 2005 the first time. I mean, I usually it's hard for me to lose. I mean, I have no comment on the kind of, I mean, if you think Berlusconi was bad, imagine when Donald Trump will come up there and will start dealing with journalists. He's already saying, oh, these disgusting people, I hate them and whatever. I mean, with the kind of attitude that I've seen under Berlusconi for 10 years was this kind of things, where people, basically women and men who worked for him, would call us and threaten us, threats, real threats. In a country that killed journalists, actually, these threats can happen. And people, I believe that when you somehow use violent words, this can easily translate it into to real violence and killing. It can easily translate into that. And that's why, again, forgive me for repeating the same thing. We need to create an ecosystem that collaborate much more with each other, that reinforce each other, and that actually, we have to create a glue, a cultural glue that reinforce and a tissue that reinforce and push back harder. Because I'm sorry, we're not pushing back harder enough, because these thugs are bullies and will throw everything they have, you know, from threats to bullying to harassment to even beating of some journalists. But we live in an era where democracy luckily still functions. So before it collapses, let's hold it together. Thank you.
Thank you. To remind you that Rula will be signing her book at the reception afterwards. And I'm also going to have a comment from Ralph Nader, who said he'd sure like this audience to know that Al Arabiya News was not allowed to cover APAC convention. They denied Al Arabiya access to the APAC.
Wise, if I'm not wrong, yeah. And I'm sure
actually,
they will deny 80% of the people sitting here.
You know,
it's not
the
dialogue. I mean,
too.
What's happening in APAC on Monday will not be a dialogue. It will be a monologue, and it's like, I mean, I obviously have a Catholic daughter, so I go to church with her sometimes, and I see how they, the way they pray, and I feel like when all of these politicians go to pray to APAC, it's just like genuflection, and please kill me more or give me whatever you want. You know, it's painful for somebody that believe in a democratic system and travel around the world and seen millions of people standing in the street from Cairo to Algeria to Tunisia, people willing to die for the principle of democracy and equality because they feel like they were born as free men and women. And this is the kind of model they look up to. And what they see on television, they see APAC basically squeezing sorry, my language, the balls of these people. And these people are basically saying, yes, please, more again.
Okay, thank you very much.